Hi, everyone. You are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you today from my closet in my apartment in Brooklyn. The interview you're about to hear was recorded at Rockefeller Center in the heart of New York City. As you know, each week we talk to the coolest culinary personalities around, the folks shaping and shaking up the food scene. Today's guest is Samantha Sheehan, the winemaker and entrepreneur based in Napa, California. Samantha is the force behind three different brands, Poe Wines, Ultraviolet Wines, and Mom and Pop Aperitifs. She also collaborates with folks like Une Femme Wines and Foxtrot Market. I think you'll love Samantha's story, especially if you're thinking about changing careers. This episode of Radio Cherry Bomb is supported by Que Sarai Champignon, a 100-year-old cheese producer and the maker of Cambazola. This fine cheese, which I happen to like very much, is made with Bavarian Alpine milk and crafted by master cheesemakers dedicated to using all natural ingredients and traditional methods to create one-of-a-kind cheeses. Cambazola, a triple cream, soft, ripened cheese with delicate notes of blue, is truly a cheese like no other. For a more intense experience, try Cambazola Black Label. Aged longer and colder than Cambazola Classic, this bold and exceptionally creamy cheese was a 2022 best-in-class winner at the renowned World Championship Cheese Contest. Whether part of an extraordinary cheese board or an ingredient in a remarkable recipe, Cambazola is an opportunity to taste the extraordinary. To celebrate 40 years in the U.S. market, Cambazola is giving away three luxurious beach vacations up to $10,000 in value. Visit thisisfinecheese.com for more information and to enter. While you're there, you can find recipes, pairings, and what stores near you carry Cambazola. That's thisisfinecheese.com. Regarding the sweepstakes, there is no purchase necessary to enter. It ends December 31st, 2022, and is open to legal residents of the 50 United States and Washington, D.C., who are at least 21 years of age at time of entry, subject to official rules available at CambazolaSweeps.com, void where prohibited. Don't forget, it's not blue, it's not brie, it's Cambazola. Today's episode is also sponsored by Helbron Levy, the country's premier full-service law firm focused on the legal and licensing needs of the hospitality and cannabis industries. I did not know this when I was starting out as an entrepreneur, although I should have, but a good lawyer is as essential as a good business idea. A decade ago, I would have told you that you need great social media, a great website, and a great mission statement. And all of those things are true, but what you need first is a solid foundation. And that starts with caring, informed, and savvy legal counsel. The team at Helbron Levy represents Cherry Bomb and many of the top names in hospitality. They've helped us a lot over the years, underscore a lot, with solid advice and wise counsel, and they are always there to help us navigate the wild world of business. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, an aspiring business owner, or you think it's time for serious representation, consider working with Helbron Levy. For a free consultation, visit helbronlevy.com. Also, Helbron Levy has a great hospitality industry newsletter that I enjoy and find very useful. You can sign up for free at Helbron Levy's website and check out their past newsletters while you're there. We've got a little housekeeping. The new issue of Cherry Bomb magazine, yes, we have a print magazine, is out now. Pick up a copy at your favorite book or cookbook shop or magazine store. You also can order from cherrybomb.com. What else? Monday, May 2nd is the last day to vote in the Foxtrot Up-and-Comers Competition Fan Favorite category. Go to foxtrotco.com/up-and-comers. That will be in our show notes if you didn't write that down. There are four fun brands duking it out for the prize, which is $5,000 cash money, a spot on the Foxtrot shelves, and $20,000 in marketing support. Hit pause and go vote. We'll wait for you. All right, you're back. One last thing. This week is the finale of Julia, the HBO Max original series based on the life of Julia Child. I've been hosting Dishing on Julia, the official companion podcast, and I hope you've been listening. If not, you have lots of great episodes of both the show and the podcast to enjoy. You can find the show streaming now on HBO Max, and the podcast can be found on all podcast platforms. Now, let's check in with today's guest. Samantha, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is so exciting to have you here. And You've never done a podcast before?
Never.
So welcome. We are so excited to be your first podcast.
Oh, thank you.
This is great. Would love to know a little bit about you pre-wine world. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Los Angeles. My father really wanted me to be an accountant. And then when I was in college, Enron happened and Sarbanes-Oxley became a really important thing. And
so Enron.
Enron.
That whole debacle, yes.
The whole scandal. Yeah. And so my dad said if I wanted to be an executive at a company, I had to understand accounting so I could sign off on financial statements. My dad's very practical. His parents like survived the Great Depression. His mother was a school teacher. His father was a painter. So, you know, he grew up without a lot of money and he was like very practical and always wanted me to have a great career. And so I love science and that's always what I wanted to study. And he told me I couldn't make any money as a scientist. And if I was going to go to college and he was going to pay for it, I had to become an accountant, which was so random because it was really not what I was good at. But yeah, I studied accounting and economics in college. And then I went on to work at Deloitte in the International Tax Consulting Group. And it's like a really, really nice company. And then I decided I would go to law school. I got into Tulane. I had a scholarship. And then I decided to go up to Napa on vacation. And I walked into a wine shop in Yountville. And the owner asked what I did. And I said, oh, I'm going to law school to become a tax accountant. And I think I had this look on my face, like I wasn't really sure. And he was like, well, is that what you love to do? And I said, no, actually, I really love champagne. I love wine. I wish I was in the wine business. And he said, well, why don't you take a job at a winery? And I was like, well, who would hire me? I have no skills at all in winemaking. Like, I have accounting skills. And he said, oh, well, there's a winemaker who just sold his brand and he's opening a new winery in downtown Napa. You should call him. So I did. I called him and he was hilarious. He answered the phone. He was kind of like the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland. He was like, hello? And I was like, hi, I'm calling because I hear that you're hiring for this new job. And he goes, I'm what? And it was like the strangest phone call I've ever had. And he was like, well, go and meet my general manager at the winery. And so I went down just like on a whim. I stayed an extra day to go meet him. And I showed up. I had these like cute little Fendi shoes and like little work skirt. It was like all dressed up. And these guys, you know, were in like steel-toed work boots and jeans. The GM said, well, okay, we'll hire you. We'll pay you $36,000 a year, which is about a third of what I was making at Deloitte. And your job is to make sure that Sean, who's now a great friend of mine, doesn't fall off the ladder. And I was like, that's my job? And they were like, yeah, do you want it or not? And it was just very, very like, take it or leave it. And I was like, I'll take it. You're going to pay me to learn about wine.
Okay, wait, I have to stop you there. This all happened because you walked into that wine shop. Had you been thinking about this prior to that? Like, I need to leave this world and get into wine.
Yeah, I kind of had that thought like in the back of my head, but I just didn't think that there was a way to get in. I think the wine world from the outside, and I don't know if it still feels that way, but I feel like 11, 12 years ago, it felt very much like you had to come from the wine world. Like, it seemed like it was probably multi-generational and you had to have like inherited this winery. I didn't think you could just walk into it.
You help this man not fall off a ladder.
Mm-hmm. He never did fall off.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, he never fell off. He was very strong.
That's
and I
funny.
Ended up working Harvest.
Tell us what that means.
The facility was like brand new. It was just sort of a building that had all these wine barrels in it, but really had to be built out as a winery. So we put in roll-up doors. We put in floor drains. We bought a press. We bought a destemmer, all of the equipment. And so that was incredible to just like learn about all of the equipment and how much it cost. And you know, of course, like having this accounting background, I think I was ended up being pretty useful. Then in end of August, Harvest started. And so it was like all hands on deck. So I ended up working Harvest, which started at about 7 a.m. and ended at about 2 a.m. 7 days a week. It was crazy.
It's intense.
Yeah. I lost, I think, 7 pounds. The first month, I was covered in bruises. I was like tired and grumpy and cold, but it was like the best time of my life. We were mostly making Napa Cabernet, which was, you know, a great experience. I learned all about like the science and sort of like the technical side of winemaking.
And was it all coming naturally to you?
Yeah, I think because I really loved science and it was always very like logical to me. I always did really well in science classes and waking up, you know, like 6 a.m, getting to the winery, kind of just before 7 and doing punch downs, like when the sun...
What's a punch down?
So when you're fermenting red wine or some whites, you run it through the destemmer and then you put the grapes into, if it's like a small fermentation, into a macro bin or into a tank. And then as the fermentation starts, the CO2 pushes the skins up and you call it the cap. And so you have to keep that submerged, not only for extraction, but also for like cleanliness. So you use this punch down tool or your feet. And
like
you basically,
I Love Lucy.
Yeah, just like I Love Lucy. And you basically like punch
so
the cap
down.
So people
still do use their feet?
Yeah.
That's a thing. Okay.
I do all the time, mostly because I'm lazy and it's like really easy just to kind of climb in and butt stomp. You know, it's like a really good ab and arm workout to do punch downs.
Do you have very soft feet? This is the weirdest question I've ever asked on Radio Cherry Bomb, everybody. But do you have really soft feet because of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just imagine like the wine, I don't know, something happens there.
Yeah. No, I think because I don't really go barefoot very often. I have soft feet.
Thank you for answering that question. Okay, so that's a punch down. When did you transition to having your own company?
Actually, the first year, because I realized that with my $36,000 salary and my schedule of working 7 a.m. until 2 a.m. 7 days a week, I was only making $8 an hour. And so I called the owner of the winery and I said, hey, you know, I realized I'm only making $7 an hour with this set salary, and I was working with all these men and they were experienced and they knew how much they should be making and what the hours would be like. So they were making 20 an hour and then 40 in overtime and 80 in double overtime. And I felt like I was always like running around, like cleaning up. I was like, why am I not getting the same salary? So I called the owner and I said, hey, I realized, you know, that I'm making $7 an hour and that's like pretty far below minimum wage. And everybody else here is making 20, 40, and 80. And the owner of the winery kind of panicked. And I think he thought I was going to sue him. I said, can I just make some wine here for free in trade? And he said, absolutely. Like, I'll give you barrels, you know, whatever you need. And that was how I started my brand. So I made one barrel of Pinot Noir and one barrel of Chardonnay.
Was that very brave for you at the time? Or were you just the kind of person who you were good for asking for what you wanted?
Yeah, I think I was good at asking.
Okay.
And I just loved wine and I just wanted to try making my own. And I think it's because I was working with all these Cabernet producers and they were making, I mean, you know, they were getting tons of accolades. They were getting 100-point scores. They were selling their wines for $200. And all I wanted to do was make natural wine. I mean, like very clean, kind of classic style of wine, but I didn't want to do all of these like technical winemaking, you know, methods. And so I kind of wanted to explore.
And you wanted to get into your beloved category of sparkling.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is the worst business model.
No. Tell me.
Yeah. Well, so I make a Blanc de Blanc. Po and Ultraviolet are the two brands I started with. Po is the brand that I made the Champagne Method sparkling wine, Chardonnay, sparkling rosé, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. And that was really like my love.
Pinot Meunier.
Yeah. So in Champagne, the three main varietals are Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Meunier. And so I make a red, I make a lot of Pinot Meunier. I make a Pet Nat style, a sparkling, and a red.
Okay.
And a Piquette for Jen Pelka.
What's a Piquette?
It actually means shit wine in French, and it's not legal to sell in France. It's basically like the worker's wine.
Okay.
So you take grape skins that have maybe already been used for something, and then you add water and ferment it. And so the alcohol is very low.
Huh. Oh,
it's like 5 to 9%.
But is there a big difference taste-wise?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely very light
in
style because it has like 50% water.
But if you're looking for something lighter, low APV.
Yeah, like light and refreshing, a good lunch wine. And so that's sort of how the vineyard workers use it. They'll drink it for lunch.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned Pet Nat. I know there's still a lot of confusion out there with natural wines, that whole category. What is a Pet Nat?
So it's Pétillant Naturel. I'm terrible with French.
It's okay.
I'm sure I butchered
that. We won't
that.
Judge. My French is terrible.
So it just means a wine that is naturally sparkling. And so typically what you do is you ferment juice down to a certain Brix, and then you put it into a bottle and let it finish.
Tell us what a Brix is, too.
Oh, that's a measurement of sugar. So how much sugar is in the grapes or in the juice.
Mm-hmm.
And so you let it finish fermentation naturally inside of a bottle, but you can also do it inside of a tank. And the the natural gas from the fermentation is what causes the carbonation.
I love pet gnats.
Oh, good.
I don't know if I'm just buying into the trendiness of pet gnats or I truly love pet gnats, but sparkling is my thing. I think I've told you that.
Yeah.
From sparkling water to spritzes to champagne, I love anything sparkling.
I'm the same way. Well, the fun thing about pet gnats, because it's like the first fermentation, they're usually pretty young. There's a lot of like fruity character.
So you can drink them right away.
Yeah, and you can also pick them later. So for champagne method sparkling, because you have two fermentations, you end up picking up an extra 1.5% of alcohol during the champagne, the sparkling fermentation. So you have to pick it really early, like a much lower alcohol. Whereas pet gnat, you can pick it basically with more sugar than you would pick a champagne method. And so you have like more fruit character than in a champagne method wine.
So you start with Poe and Ultraviolet. Did you start with two brands out of the gate?
Yeah. I started with Poe and Ultraviolet in 2009. And my aunt did the first label. She lives in Morristown, New Jersey. And then I met Michael, who's my husband, in 2010. And the first thing he did was change my label. And he was really worried that like my mother and my aunt would be mad at him for changing it. So it was like kind of a little bit of family drama, although they really weren't at all. They weren't upset because the label that he designed was beautiful. So Michael is a label designer. He's probably done 600 wine labels. He did the Mathiasen labels, probably the one that people know the most. And Favia, which is actually at Morel right across the way here.
We have the Morel wine shop right across from where we record our podcast.
Yeah.
I love wine labels. I will admit I have bought lots of wine based on the label. I'm sure your husband loves that.
He would be happy to hear that.
So you do two brands right out of the gate. That's ambitious.
Yeah, I just wanted to explore. And I think that's what led me to Mom and Pop. I'm just sort of always trying new things and making different wines. And I just want to make what I want to drink. Like, really, it always starts with, I would like to drink this, so I'm going to make it. And I just figured that if no one buys it, then I'll drink it all myself. Also, might not be the best business model, but...
Sam's a good business person. We'll get up to that later. How do you figure out distribution for the brands?
I met a couple who had a brokerage in California at a party, a wine tasting, and they were like, we'd like to sell your wine. And so
brokerage is a term for someone who does wine distribution?
In California, you're allowed to have a broker or a distributor because you can sell direct in California. And so a distributor buys your product from you and they like take possession of it and then they sell it. And a broker, you still have possession of your product and then they get a commission from the sales.
So they decided to go the broker route.
Yeah. Well, I was like, who's going to buy my wine? I've never made wine before. I've only been doing this for a year. I was just really impressed somebody wanted to sell it.
And people wanted to buy it.
Yeah, they sold it all. It was about 45 cases and they sold all of it in like 3 weeks. It was amazing.
And what did that tell you?
Like, I think I can do this. I think I can.
And what was the reaction to the wine? Because I know wine reviews are a big deal.
I think like the buyers, restaurants and stores were excited that there was, a new brand by someone who was young. I think at the time there were a lot of like big Cabernets sort of coming out of Napa. I mean, there were, of course, like some cool smaller producers, but maybe not as many then. Steve Mathiasen and Jill were definitely doing it. A lot of people whose wines I love were there. But yeah, people are just really supportive.
What would you say is the signature of your wines?
Yeah.
Because you wanted something that wasn't out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to work with vineyards that are family owned. Families are really involved in the farming. And most of the vineyards are farmed organically. And so all of the wines, again, because they're wines that I drink, I just want to make sure that they come from organically farmed vineyards and there's nothing added and the wines are just clean and natural.
So for those out there who have always dreamed of having their own wine or making their own wine, you don't necessarily have to own a vineyard.
No. You can either commit to buy tonnage of grapes. So you can say, I'd like to buy, 5 tons from you this year. Or you can lease, like have long-term leases with rows, which is what I do.
So you have your own rows and a vineyard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. Which is great because then you really can see like the season or the year-to-year differences, like the vintage differences. And then you can have like complete control over the farming.
Tell us what Mom and Pop is and then tell us why you launched Mom and Pop.
So Mom and Pop is our citrus aperitif brand. We make it all Napa. And I launched that brand because I really loved Lillet and I loved Aperol. And I sort of wanted to make our own version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have three like core flavors. We make a Seville orange, a grapefruit, and a blood orange. And then we have some seasonal flavors that we do. So we make a recruit lime, a Meyer lemon, and a kumquat.
Yum. And everybody at Jubilee got to try the Meyer lemon one, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about the drink you made for Jubilee.
Oh, we made a Meyer lemon spritz, which was so much fun. So it was our Meyer lemon aperitif, and then we added a little bit of sparkling Pellegrino and some Prosecco.
You had the prettiest activation. Thank you so much for building that gorgeous bar. Tell us a sec about that bar.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
That was all citrus skin in the front. I mean, Yes. That was mind-blowing.
Yeah. So my husband, Michael, wanted to have the front panel CNC milled. And we have a friend who has a design studio in Brooklyn. And so when they plugged the citrus pulp pattern into the computer that does the CNC milling, it froze. I think there was just like too much detail in the pulp. And so Michael was like, you know, it was 2 weeks before the event. He was like, we have to figure this out. And so he poured this giant silicone like rectangle, and he took a razor blade and curved it. And then he carved a citrus pulp pattern into the silicone. And then I helped him with this part. This is really fun. We poured this like resin into the silicone mold. And then when it dried, we peeled the mold off. And so we had these two 9 feet, I think, rectangle resin castings of citrus pulp. We essentially like attached one to each side of the booth. And then we strung Meyer lemons. There's this really cool distillery called Matchbook Distilling, and they connected me with one of their growers out here, and they hooked us up with like 700 pounds of Meyer lemons, which we strung from the top of the booth. And we're going to give those to Matchbook to use for distilling.
I love that. No food waste, folks.
Yeah.
You will have those two panels forever. I mean, yeah. You could hang those over a fireplace or something. They're very cool looking.
We're going to make a door for our office.
Oh, I love that. What do you wish you knew back then that you know today?
I always thought I could do everything myself. And so for about 10 years, I had zero employees. And then this year, we brought on quite a few people. Now we have 9 for mom and pop. Like 1 year, we brought everybody on. And it's amazing.
Now, you have 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So doing all that on your own for 10 years, that's a lot.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. You have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Let's talk finances a little bit. How have you funded the company all these years?
Just with proceeds from sales, so self-funded.
So you never got over your skis in terms of what you were making or doing?
No, I was always like very conservative about it. So I only made what I knew that I could sell, and then just, you know, put the profits back into the business, which meant not paying myself a salary for a few years. It was great because I learned every like aspect.
Did you have
of
savings? Because you told us how much you were making at Deloitte, and I'm like, wow, I should have studied accounting in college.
Yeah, but it's,
so did you have your Deloitte money saved? Did you?
Yeah, I had Deloitte money saved. First few years, I consulted for other wineries on the side. And so that was what paid sort of my living expenses while I built the business on the side.
Got it. Okay.
In tandem.
How did you have the funds to hire 9 people?
You know, Ultraviolet has grown quite a bit. And so right now that business is essentially, you know, helping to grow mom and pop.
Tell me some of your goals for the company.
I feel that there's so much potential with mom and pop, especially after being out here. We've had a lot of like bartenders get really excited about it and restaurants.
And we served it at the Julia Child dinner that we did to celebrate the launch of the HBO Max Julia series, and people loved it.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I just would really love to see it in like more bars and restaurants and in more people's hands.
I love a spritz. It's going to be my go-to. This summer.
That's awesome. It's so fun to make. I'm really excited about all of like the vineyards that we're working with and like the small farmers that we're supporting. And now working with citrus, you know, we have those like same types of relationships. So we have a number of citrus growers that we're working with in California, and they're just like so excited, you know, to have an outlet for their produce and to see it being used in this way. So it just feels really good to be like supporting these farmers and to have them as partners. And so I would just love to see more people enjoying it. I mean, that's like the whole pleasure of this business is like seeing people consuming your product.
Now we know about your accounting side. We know about your science side. How about you as a creative? How do you exercise that side of your brain?
I think it's more about keeping that in control, because I'm always wanting to make new products and always trying new things. And the first person to stop me is Michael, my husband. So he's like, okay, Sam, if you design, you know, if you come out with a new product, then I'm going to have to design the label and the packaging. So he's the first stop. And then our sales team is our second stop, because they're like, Sam, there's a lot of setup work that goes into this.
What is your advice to other entrepreneurs now that you've been doing this for so long?
I think it's always just to talk to as many people as you can and get as much advice as you can. With a lot of things, you have to learn it yourself. But just really talking to people that you respect is so key, because I learned everything in terms of winemaking and mom and pop just by asking a lot of questions and just being like really open to advice and not being afraid to ask questions, because people are so supportive, and it feels like everybody in this industry just wants to support each other. And it doesn't feel competitive, which is incredible.
That surprises me, because I wouldn't have assumed there was space for a young woman changing careers with no wine background to come in and do what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you've made a name for yourself.
Oh, thank you. I've only ever had one person say no to a piece of information that I asked. And that was a winemaker. It was my favorite winery in Burgundy. I was telling the owner how much I loved his wine. And I asked him if he would tell me what barrels he used. And he said no. And then he invited me to the winery. He's like, well, if you'd ever like to come, like, here's my card. And I said, great, I'm going to walk around and like look at all of the barrels. And he said, oh, we sand off the names. And I was like, you have a Grand Cru vineyard in Burgundy, like the most beautiful, most famous vineyard in the world. Like, I could never recreate that wine, even if I had the same barrels. So that was kind of funny. And I remember it so well, because it was literally the only time somebody said no. So many people, like Steve Mathiason and Dan Petrosky, if I have a question, I'll just call them on the spot in the middle of my problem. And they always answer the phone, and they always tell me everything from like their own experience and from what they've read or what they've learned. It's incredible. Like, people are just so, and I think it's because we all love what we do. And we also know that somebody can't like recreate exactly what we're doing. But even without that, I think just people are really passionate about their careers and about this industry. And people love, you know, having relationships with each other. So everyone's always just really free with their information and advice.
It sounds like you've never had imposter syndrome.
Oh, all the time.
You do?
Literally every single day.
But it hasn't stopped you.
No, I think I'm also very, very stubborn and really optimistic. So I always assume I'll figure out a way.
Stubborn and optimistic. Those are two interesting traits.
Yeah. No, all the time. Like, are people going to realize that my wines aren't good enough? Or, well, yeah, constantly. But I think you just have to kind of like barrel through it.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
What are your dreams for your brands?
For Mom and Pop and Ultraviolet, because those are two brands that were really growing. Just to be in every single restaurant, every single one. I mean, of course. Yeah, just to really grow them and have people enjoying them, like truly enjoying them. And then Poe will always be small. So
Poe's your baby.
Yes. Yeah. Those are wines that come from small vineyards, and we'll never be able to make a lot of those. So
do you want to have your own physical winery one day?
Yeah. I think my dream would be having a winery that's broken out into two parts. And so the back would be Mom and Pop. And we would have a citrus grove with all these esoteric citrus varietals. And we would have all the botanicals that we use in Mom and Pop. And like a little tasting area where we could do seasonal spritzes and seasonal flavors and be able to cook and serve, you know, food pairings. And then maybe the front would be all for sparkling wine making. So we'd have Riddling racks and all of our bottles on tirage. Yeah, it would be fun.
Oh my gosh, I can totally envision that. I mean, as you were talking about it, I see some dogs and cats maybe too.
Yeah, as long as they stay off the tables.
Are you not an animal person?
No, I love animals.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, we have...
It's hard to keep the cats off the tables.
We have a lurcher. She would keep the cats off the tables.
What's a lurcher?
So a lurcher, it's a breed from the 1500s.
It's a dog?
A dog breed. It's not an officially recognized breed, but if you go to London or Ireland, everybody knows exactly what a lurcher is. So in like the 1500s, only the royalty were allowed to hunt on the royal hunting grounds, like the upper class. And so they'd breed greyhounds for racing and deer hounds for hunting. And occasionally they crossbreed and they'd throw out the puppies. And the puppies would interbreed with terriers. And then they would use these crossbred dogs for poaching on like the royal hunting grounds. And they called them a lurcher, which actually means a mixed breed thief.
Oh,
which is interesting.
I didn't know that. I was thinking Lurch from the Addams Family.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to look up lurchers. So the lurchers will keep the cats away. All right.
Yeah, she's the most beautiful dog. She can jump like 6 feet, so she can clear these giant hedges.
Would love to know some tools that you rely on as an entrepreneur.
We've been using MailChimp for 11 years. It's great. QuickBooks. Yes, that's the accountant in me. I love downloading reports and just seeing how sales are going and projecting our sales throughout the year. And then we use QuickBooks Payroll, which is amazing. And we use Slack as well.
You do. Yeah, we love Slack.
Mm-hmm. And then we use Basecamp for our marketing.
Tell me about Basecamp. I don't know about Basecamp.
It's a great place for like communicating and sort of keeping those like work communications organized. And then also we can...
You mean with like third parties?
Just internally, but then you can also use it for contractors. You can have like groups that contractors have access to.
How is that different from Slack?
Yeah, Basecamp, you can assign like tasks to people and then it reminds them. And then you can sort of like tick the box when it's done, which is great.
What's next for you?
Like today or in life in general?
Today and in life.
As soon as I get back to Napa, we're going to start sort of like working on first we're bottling. So I get back tonight, which is Monday. And then this entire week, we're going to spend putting our blends together for mom and pop. And then next week, we're bottling. So we're bottling our Seville orange and our blood orange flavors. And then we're bottling our Paloma, which is awesome. It's a little 187 champagne bottle with a crown cap that we're making a Paloma in and carbonating it. So it's like a little, you know, ready to drink cocktail. And then we have a bunch of fun like summer events planned. So I'm really excited.
That's fun. Are they mostly in Napa?
Yeah, all in California.
Okay.
This is the only one that we're doing out of state. And I thought it was a little crazy that the first event we were doing as a team was not only not in California, but completely across the country. But I could not turn down Cherry Bomb.
It's the
one event we wanted to do this year.
Thank you for being part of Jubilee. It was a really special day. And it was just so lovely seeing everyone together again. And I appreciate your support and you taking care of everybody on Saturday for us.
Oh, we loved being a part of it. I mean, everyone was just so lovely. I enjoyed like every conversation I had with every person. It was like, will you be my friend? Will you be my friend? Will you be my friend? I mean, it was just such a great group of women.
You are the best, Sam. Thank you so much for your support and for joining us. And I'm going to have major FOMO seeing these events out in Napa and California. I need to
come out.
I need to get out there. It's been a while, but it would be a blast.
Yeah, come out and visit us.
Absolutely.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much to Samantha Sheehan for joining me. Want to support Samantha? Check out the websites for her three brands, Poe Wines, Ultraviolet Wines, and Mom and Pop. Or ask for them at your favorite wine shop or restaurant. Sam's brand new wine for Foxtrot Market, Mouthy, is available at foxtrotco.com. Thank you to Cambazola for supporting today's show. Sign up for their beach vacation giveaway at thisisfinecheese.com. And thank you to the law firm of Helbron Levy. Visit helbronlevy.com for a free consultation. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. Our theme song is by the band Tra La La. Thank you, Joseph Hazen, studio engineer for Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center. And thank you to our assistant producer, Jenna Sadu. And thanks to you for listening. You're the bomb.